All right, that's chronic bronchitis. That's not too painful, is it? Now, emphysema is a little more complicated, but there you go. So, permanent enlargement of acini is the defining characteristic of emphysema. So, what is an acinus again? Say again? Okay, you guys are not speaking up today. I can barely hear any of you. I'm deaf, you know. Too much time as a kid going to Latin clubs. Okay, the respiratory unit, and what's it made up of? Alveoli. Okay, and what leads into the alveolus? A terminal bronchial. Here's kind of our acinus, and then that terminal bronchial in turn has little grape-like sacs of alveoli running off of it. Now, when we have emphysema, what we do is we destroy the acinus. So what happens is instead of little grapes, we just have big open spaces. Now, what is the purpose of alveoli in the first place? Gas exchange. And why do we have alveoli instead of one big open space to begin with? Increased surface area. So when we destroy all of those little alveoli, and now we have a big open space, we've just lost surface area. Now that surface area means we're going to have reduced what? Reduced gas exchange. It's going to be harder to get carbon dioxide out and oxygen in. What else does it mean for our lung? As we destroy those alveoli, what takes their place? Scar tissue. Now, is scar tissue more or less flexible than alveoli? Less flexible. So is it going to be harder or easier to get air in and out of the lung? It's going to be harder. So we've got a double whammy. On the one hand, it's harder to get air in and out of the lung. On the other hand, once we do get the air in and out of the lung, it doesn't diffuse as well. All of this leads to bad stuff. All right. So, permanent enlargement of the acini causing destruction of alveolar walls without fibrosis. Major limitation to airflow is loss of elasticity due to lung tissue destruction. So, the lung tissue is less elastic. It's harder to compress. It's harder to open up. So, it makes it harder to ventilate. Mild emphysema is normal with aging. Everyone, as they get older, will have a little bit of destruction of their acini. Not a huge deal as long as it's very small. But if it happens earlier and more quickly, that's when we get the disease emphysema. Now, when it happens in a young person and happens everywhere in the lung, that's almost always associated with either smoking or there's 2% of emphysema cases which are caused by choosing the wrong parents. And that's called primary emphysema. Primary emphysema happens because you have a genetic problem. Secondary emphysema is as a result of smoking. To a lesser degree, other environmental pollutants, but smoking is by far the number one. Oh, by the way, there's just a report that came out, said that secondhand smoke is not harmful to other people. I can't remember. I'll look it up for you. Maybe I'll have it. Maybe I'll email it to you. No, actually, I think in this case they're right. It may be unpleasant. It may trigger asthma attacks, but as far as actually harming the lung, doesn't do it. You've been sold a bunch of goods. Now, I'm not saying it's not nasty. I'm not saying that it's not unpleasant, and I'm not saying that I would like to smell smoke. I'm just saying it's not going to kill you. Are these the same old people that are asking their grandparents to pay their medical bills? But they don't have the guts to ask their grandchildren directly, so they have the government steal it from them. And that is what Medicare is, after all, if you think about it. I know you're shaking your head because you don't want to believe that your grandmother would do that to you. But she does. All right. So, now that we got that out of the way. Okay, this is kind of what a normal alveolar acinus would look like. So we've got the terminal bronchial coming in, and then the little grape-like, it looks more like cauliflower to me, but... Now, in panlobar emphysema, you get destruction of all of these little alveoli into just a big alveolus. And then in centrilobar, you have the same thing, but now you have a few more individuals. Bottom line is, no matter which type of emphysema you get, you're going to get destruction of the acinus. All right, emphysema etiology. No matter whether you have primary or secondary, the reason a person gets emphysema is because they start an inflammatory process and their body can't shut it down. So starting up the inflammatory process is not necessarily abnormal. What's abnormal is we can't shut down the process. So what does this word proteolytic mean? Proteolytic. Well, what does lytic mean? Break down or destroy. What does proteo mean? Protein. So protein destroying enzymes. In inflammation, you have protein destroying enzymes. And those enzymes are designed to break down abnormal proteins so that your body can heal again. But in the case of emphysema, we can't turn those off. And so as a result, your structural proteins are destroyed, including the membranes of the alveolus. So in primary emphysema, the problem is our person can't produce this enzyme, alpha-1 antitrypsin. And alpha-1 antitrypsin is the protein responsible for inhibiting our proteolytic enzymes. So because they can't produce the off switch, the inflammation just keeps going. In secondary edema, the inhaled toxins in cigarette smoke are what inhibits the antiproteases. To a lesser degree, air pollution can also do this. Oh, by the way, have any of you ever seen an emphysematous lung? It's this beautiful shade of purple. It's really quite lovely. What? Maybe later. All right, inhaled toxins. Emphysema pathogenesis. You start out with inhaled, this is not the primary, this is for secondary. We start out with inhaled toxins, and that causes epithelial inflammation and infiltration by leukocytes. The inflammatory cytokines inhibit endogenous antiproteases, which leads to the destruction of alveoli. There's elastin proteolysis. I don't know how to pronounce that well. All right. But basically, alveoli, the major structural protein in alveoli is elastin. Elastin is, by nature, elastic. It can stretch. So when we start destroying the elastin, we start destroying the elastic properties of alveoli. So we're going to destroy the alveolar walls, or septa, which is going to decrease surface area, lowering perfusion. Cross out perfusion, put both. It'll lower perfusion because there's less blood flow to that area. It'll also lower diffusion because there's not enough space to come across it. Capillary destruction is going to lead to pulmonary hypertension because you're trying to pump the same amount of blood through fewer arteries now, or fewer capillaries. And so that's going to make more pressure. So, how many of you had to drive on Military Trail when it was under construction? Okay, only one of you. How many of you had to drive on I-95 when it's under construction? Or there's a car accident, better yet. So there's a car accident that morning. We shut down that part of I-95. What happens to all the other roads? Okay. Military Trail, Congress, and US-1, all of a sudden, every car that was going to be on I-95 is now on those roads. So those roads become backed up as well. So there's more pressure on the entire road network in Palm Beach County around that crash. So what happens when you destroy alveolar capillaries is you cause increased pressure in the lung as far as blood pressures go. That in turn is going to make the heart work harder, which is going to lead to heart failure. Decreased elasticity makes it more difficult to expire. It's easier to get air in than it is to get the air out, which is going to lead to increased air in the acinus, which is eventually going to lead to lung hyperinflation. So let's go back and recap. The alveolar walls get destroyed. That's going to cause harder to breathe out. Harder to breathe out means that lungs are going to get hyperinflated. At the same time, you're going to have less diffusion. So whatever air does get in, you don't diffuse as well. At the same time, you've destroyed the alveolar walls, you've also destroyed the capillaries in those walls. Destroying the capillaries in those walls makes the pressure in the pulmonary circulation go up, which is going to eventually lead to heart failure. So emphysema, bad stuff, except for that nice, beautiful shade of purple. Emphysema patho. Air pocket formation in the lung, we call these bulla. Now, bulla is one of your vocabulary words. What does it mean? In the skin, what is a bulla? It's a blister, a larger blister. Now, in the lungs, bulla is not filled with fluid, it's filled with air. But it's a big pocket filled with air. If they're adjacent to the pleura, we call it a bleb. And if a bleb pops, that will lead to the thing we learned about yesterday. Yes, what is that called? When the lung collapses, pneumothorax. Spontaneous pneumothorax. So if the bulla is next to the pleura, it's called a bleb. If it pops, it will cause a spontaneous pneumothorax. Now, location, location, location. We have two different distributions of emphysema. We have centri acinar, which means they're more in the center. And then we have panacinar, which means they're kind of more diffuse all over the lung. Centri acinar are mostly in the upper lobes, and they're more common in combination with chronic bronchitis and smoking. Panacinar is diffuse. It's all throughout the lung and is more common in primary emphysema where you chose the wrong parents. Choosing the wrong parents just meant that you chose parents with genetic defects that they passed on to you. It doesn't mean that they hate you. I'm sure they didn't say, you know what, let's have a kid just so we can have just so they can have emphysema. I guarantee they didn't do that. They just didn't know better. Gattaca, ooh, that's a good one. We'll talk about Gattaca another time. All right. So in the lung, you have the big pockets. We call them bulla. If you have a pocket up on the pleura, we call it a bleb. And blebs are more likely to rupture and cause spontaneous pneumothorax. All right, clinical manifestations of emphysema. First one is dyspnea on exertion, which will ultimately lead to dyspnea at rest when it gets worse. There's very little coughing and very little sputum with emphysema, unless the patient also has chronic bronchitis. So, what is the definition of COPD? What is our definition of COPD? A patient who has either or both chronic bronchitis and emphysema. So, yes, either or both. No, they're either or both. There's very few people who have one completely without the other. So that's where you... Chronic bronchitis tends to be a little more predominant. So most people will have more chronic bronchitis than they do emphysema. It just depends on the patient. You're going to see both extremes, though. But if a patient has emphysema without chronic bronchitis, they're not going to have coughing. The coughing is caused by the chronic bronchitis. And you're going to have a test question about that. You're going to have a question about this concept, that emphysema by itself without chronic bronchitis does not cause coughing.
So the only way to figure it out
is emphysema by itself does not cause coughing.
Right. Or very little. And definitely not productive.
So the only way to visually tell you have it is by a EFT or an X-ray?
Well, Yeah, emphysema, usually you're gonna find that on the chest X-ray. Now, patients with emphysema are usually thin. They're usually tachypneic, and they have prolonged expiration. It's harder to breathe out than it is to breathe in. You tell me what tachypneic means.
Fast breathing.
They're also going to use accessory muscles, and they're going to be barrel-chested. If you percuss their lung fields, they will be hyper-resonant because their lungs are overinflated. Now, I want you to imagine for a moment, why is this guy thin? Why is this guy thin? Not only is he so tired that he's using so much energy breathing that he doesn't really feel like eating that much, but he's always exercising. He's using so much energy to breathe, so much muscles breathing, that he's going to be really thin because he's wasted away all his other muscles. But he's going to have nice, big sternocleidomastoids. All right, so evaluation. Spirometry. The total lung capacity of a person like this can be 2 times a normal person's. It's pretty big. Chest X-ray, arterial blood gases, and the treatment. Chest X-ray, white blood cell counts, oxygen, oral steroids, and antibiotics. I guess these first two are not really treatments, they're evaluation. Chronic treatment, we're going to have the patient stop smoking to stop the damage and administer bronchodilators, anticholinergics, and low doses of oxygen. All right, now how many of you have ever heard on the radio or on TV where they say, if you stop smoking within 5 years, your lung is completely returned to normal? Okay, 7 years, fine. How many of you heard that? I guess a couple of you, huh? It's true and it's not at the same time. What returns to normal within 7 years is the airway, the changes in the bronchial lining. Emphysema destruction will never return to normal. So those truth people are slightly lying to you. Oh, that's another thing. Yeah. Do you remember a couple years back when all the states sued the tobacco companies and they got these multi-million dollar things that were supposed to go towards education and education of anti-smoking campaigns? Most of the states that received that money have taken that money and just used it for other purposes now. You cannot trust a politician. Not even me. Oh, wait, I'm not running. All right, you can't see it up there because it's in the black part, but chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So chronic pulmonary obstructive disease leads to hypoxia. Hypoxia, in turn, leads to pulmonary vasoconstriction, which in turn leads to pulmonary vascular resistance, which leads to pulmonary hypertension, which leads to right ventricular hypertrophy, which leads to cor pulmonale or heart failure, which leads to the other heart failure. Oh, death. Yeah, forgot that one. Yeah. At the same time, hypoxia also leads to polycythemia, which is increased red blood cell. Increased red blood cell count increases the viscosity of blood, makes it harder to pump, which in turn leads to pulmonary hypertension, which leads to... All right. Now, over on this side, we have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease leads to acidosis and hypercapnia, which in turn is going to lead to pulmonary vasoconstriction, which leads to... And COPD leads to reduction of pulmonary vascular bed because you're destroying alveolar capillaries, which leads to blah, 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 blah. Bottom line is, COPD, if it gets bad enough and is left for long enough, will always lead to heart failure. But it's a long road and it takes a long time to get there. But it will lead to heart failure eventually. All right, we're done talking about COPD. Aren't you glad?